This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to the Whitecaps Weekly. It's St. Patrick's Day. It's Thursday, March 17th. I am Patrick Johnston here in the beautiful downtown studios of the province, and standing out in the sun is Mark Weber. Mark, when is St. Mark's Day?
I have no idea. Is that a day?
I'm sure it is.
Do I get one?
I'm sure there is one.
I've never been a huge St. Patty's Day guy, I got to admit.
It's okay.
I mean, back in the day, like when you're
young and foolish.
When you're first sort of consuming alcohol and the Blarney Stone was cool.
Blarney Stone was great. I really had some.
Is
good
it still
times.
Cool?
I have no idea.
There were definitely some epic St. Paddy's Day days at the Blarney Stone, but
yes.
then I turned, you know, like 22 or something.
Now I have to ask you. Posted a photo. I'm not sure if it was on how public it was, but I know you posted a photo of you sitting on the sidelines at UBC. What year was that? Because the logo.
I think that was 90. Yeah, Mike Dial, who was a volleyball, great volleyball player at UBC, won the Bobby Gall Award. He guessed 98. I think he's right. I think that was probably 98.
So you would have just started, wouldn't you? Something like that.
96 was my first year,
oh, wow.
And I walked into Bruce Enns, who's the men's basketball coach at UBC, and I had been I was a very poor basketball player in high school. I was cut. And in grade 8, and became the manager because I wanted to still hang around my friends, and I liked stats. And I used to keep them all by hand, and then Excel came out, and yeah, that's a whole day. So I walked into Bruce Enns' office first day of my UBC life in September 96, and I said, "Hi, Bruce Enns. My name is Mark Weber. I was a manager of St. George's. Do you need a manager?" And he said, "No, but go down the hall." go downstairs and talk to these guys, Cam and Derek. They run this thing called Thunder Productions. It's a bunch of students get together and they put on all the varsity games. So that's what I did. I made a $600 honorarium that year, I believe, to work probably about 20 hours a week in the bowels of Ward Gym. And we had an unbelievable time as a bunch of students. And it was very unprofessional back then. We put on all the varsity games. Yeah, that was it. Everything from, you know, picking intro songs, running music, writing scripts for the announcers, hiring mascots, coming up with halftime contests, trying to sell sponsorships. We did it all. It was a lot of fun. And then we go drinking. So yeah, a lot of weekends in Ward Gym, a lot of weekends at the pit. And then I got slightly more respectable and became the PR guy there for 8 or 9 years. I made, what, 5 trips to Halifax, I think, with men's basketball. So that team has a very special place in my heart, and the coach is still the same, of course, Kevin Hansen, who I'm close with. And I can't wait for this weekend. I've got a lot of emotional investment in that program because it came so close so often and so many disappointments that I went through that program with in Halifax, which is a long way to go. Let me tell you, it's a long way to go to lose in your opening game of the tournament. Whether you're a player or a coach or staff or a parent or friends making the trip, it's not the easiest place to get to. And unfortunately, we had some disappointments in Halifax. But anyway, long-winded story. That's my life at UBC. And I look forward to being out there this weekend.
We're here to talk soccer,
for fun.
Of course. Yes.
Oh, yeah, right. Of
Do
course.
You remember them? Remember those Whitecaps?
People like to know about my life. Yeah, the Whitecaps. They're pretty good.
We've been saying they're pretty good. And as you've written about, I think it was for today's paper, you've told people not to fret.
Papers. Apparently I was in the sun today, too.
Oh, it's a new...
This is the new post-media world, Patrick. Do I have to change my Twitter handle? I've been asking you this. I had a light survey.
Post-media Weber?
I need to change my Twitter handle. Yeah, I almost did that today. I wrote it in and I almost hit, you know, okay on the settings. And I just looked at it and it just looked wrong. And it sounded wrong. And it makes me sound like I'm tweeting from the grave, I feel like.
Is there a
post-apocalyptic? I don't know. I might have to go with post-media Weaver, yeah.
Or
Sun Weaver?
I was going to say Weebs, but Weebs I'm not sure if Weebs is
just Weebs.
Is it at Weebs Taken? That would be something.
Yeah. Well, Worldwide Weber is Taken. I remember that from years back when I tried. That was my first attempt at Twitter. Anyway, maybe we'll survey the listeners for a Twitter handle.
Yeah.
One of life's great and very important features, your Twitter handle.
Yeah.
The Caps are 0-2. They're making me look foolish because I said that they would be improved this year. And, of course, two games in, it's all over. I did get the sense partway through that Montreal game, first half even, I think, or halftime, I will say I tweeted that I'm getting the feeling this is going to be a slow start to the season for this team. And there's too many questions right now to have confidence that they're going to go get a result in Seattle, I feel. The right back spot obviously is an issue. And if you look at, Piatti picked apart Aird in week one. Graham Zuzzi picked apart Jordan Smith in week two on the 2-0 goal. And it was lights out before halftime, and then he got sent off, of course. And now they're going down to Seattle. You'd assume they come back with Aird. And you hope, you know, he's 21. You hope he does better. It's not really about him. It's about the position and, you know, the loss of Bedeschor and bringing in these two guys. Have they done enough at that spot to win games? And you go from Piatti and Zuzzi to now Clint Dempsey, maybe playing on that left side. You got a good player in Valdez up top. You've got Even Shits in that number 10 role, a very good player. So it's going to be another big test for him. They've got to defend better as a team. He is one of many players, Frazier Herd, who needs to step up their games individually. This is certainly not on one player. Last week it was Davey Flores coughing the ball up on the first goal. Bolaños, didn't do enough week one. Lava's not been himself. Kendall Wasson's not quite been himself. Osted had a mistake. So it's their big players as well. And up front, they haven't scored from the run of play. And you can't ignore that either. They've got two set piece goals. So that's encouraging on that front. And then you've got the PK from Pedro Morales, but they haven't scored from the run of play. And we haven't seen, Cucurimani's had chances not finished. Octavio Rivero's had chances not finished. You can sprinkle in some luck in there too. They've hit the crossbar. They've had some very good attempts saved. They've been beaten on some fabulous goals. I mean, Dom Dwyer, say what you want about Flores' turnover, but Dom Dwyer hits an absolute screamer from sort of 22, 23, 4 yards. And so there's a bit of luck involved. But on the whole, they've not played well. They've not played nearly well enough. There's definitely big concerns defensively right now. And you just get the feeling that, the injuries have added up. You've got these strange suspensions now every week. It just doesn't feel like it's going to be a very good start to the season. And you look at the schedule, Seattle's going to be a tough one. You've got Houston in a week now with international call-ups, which we'll get to later, which is going to be tough for the Caps to cobble together a back line for that game. So definitely reasons for concern. But, as you noted that I wrote about today or yesterday, today's paper, it's two games and there's 32 to go, and you can start slowly in this league and still have a very, very good finish. In fact, it's much more important to have a good finish than a good start, and that's been borne out over the years. That was my sense sort of anecdotally, and then when you go through the numbers, I was even more convinced of that fact. I mean, if you take the last 10 MLS Cup finalists, so every MLS Cup finalist from 2011 to 2015, 9 of those 10 teams had more points in the final 5 games in the season, the final 10 games of the season than the first 10 games. And 8 of those 10 teams had more points in the final 5 games of the season than the first 5 games of the season. So it's definitely more important how you finish. And you see it year after year. You look at Portland last year, they were winless in 4 or 5 to start the year. They went on a tear at the end. Same thing for Columbus in the final. And that's kind of borne itself out. You can't bury yourself too bad. You can't get in too big a hole. There's no question, especially in the West, where playoff spots are really, really hard to come by. But, as long as you're hanging around by the summer, you're not in bad shape. It's really about how you gel, how you grow. This is essentially the same team, but there have been a couple of changes, which we're seeing are significant ones, and right back being the number one.
It, you know, just to go back to your point about teams finishing versus how they start. I mean, that sort of goes with logic, I suppose, as well. When you realize the fact that every year you're putting together a new team, and it is going to take time for them to gel, and that if you have built your roster correctly, you will just simply outlast everybody else because your team is better. So, I guess we'll see. But.
Well, and I think it also, what it also reflects is sometimes coaches are always thinking not just one or two steps ahead. They're thinking five or six or seven steps ahead, and fans aren't. Fans are living in the now. And so, the selection for me last week wasn't great. I was surprised to see Davy Flores start ahead of Keon Sproles. It obviously backfired early, so you can pick apart that specific selection. Okay, flip a coin at right back, whether he came back with Aird, whether he went with Smith. I don't know if he could have won. Kyle Robinson could have won in that selection, but and then you can pick apart whether he plays two forwards or not, and everyone, a lot of people seem to be calling for that. I think we will see that in Seattle. So, yes, there's things he could have done differently. But I would also say, you know, when you look at how coaches make these decisions early in the season, they're thinking about lots of different things that we're not thinking about. Of course, they need to win games and they want to win games. They're thinking about, you know, will I need Davy Flores at some point this season? Okay, Keon Sproles might get called up for Canada. So what happens if Laba goes down? What do we have in this player? Okay, Tybert's out right now. Why don't we, you know, let's give him a game. Let's see what he does. You don't want anyone to be able to say that you didn't give him a chance. So maybe that's a bad example because I think people could say, look, Flores had lots of chances last season. Why do you need to, you know, see him again in KC when you have other guys like Keon Sproles sitting there? But my general point being, through the first five, six, seven games of the year as a coach, you want to see lots of things. You want to see lots of different combinations, lots of different partnerships. I'm sure he's going to go with two forwards at some point sooner than later, as he did in the preseason. This idea that he's fixated on 4-2-3-1, I think it's an interesting discussion. I think, you know, he's showed that's his preferred formation up until now, but they've also had a ton of guys out. They haven't had time to have everyone together as much as they'd like through preseason. Everyone in midfield, especially Laba, Morales, Bolaños, barely were on the field together in preseason. You know, there's lots of time left to figure out what the best formation is for this team and what the best personnel, what their best 11 is, what the best combinations are. You know, to assume that Kyle Robinson already knows the answers to that would be foolish. He doesn't. And the early part of the season is about figuring that out. And then once you get the lineup set and your ideas set, you know, a month or two in, I think that's when you start to see, you know, kind of who's for real in this league. And you don't think LA tinkers and takes their time. Year after year, we see it out of LA, these slow starts, and then they just pour it on at the end. Maybe not so much last season. And of course, you could argue they've had such quality over the years that they're able to turn it on when they want, as opposed to a team like Vancouver. But I just wouldn't get so worked up about the start of the season.
It's funny to actually think about it that in a way, you know, the Whitecaps in a certain level are at risk of being hurt by their own success in producing and having quality players that are of interest to other teams. And I think you were telling me that this, you know, this is the most international squad in MLS, and if it's not, it's the second. You know, so you got guys getting called up for World Cup qualifiers. You have, you know, guys getting called into the U-20 camp for Canada. It's a lot to juggle, and when things aren't firing all that well, it's not exactly ideal for the coaches.
No, but that's the choice they made. I mean, that's the risk of going with a lineup heavy in internationals, which they've chosen to do. And if you get the players of that caliber, you're going to deal with that. So, you know, I certainly don't deserve any sympathy for that. You know how things work. As much as we want to sit around and grumble and gripe about the MLS schedule and its lack of breaks for international FIFA international dates, you know the reality you're living in. If you're going to bring those players in, you know you're going to lose them. So now it becomes about depth. They believe they've added that depth. I've seen that depth on display throughout the preseason. We haven't seen it come to fruition through two games, but they've had a lot of guys hurt. You know, we haven't seen Tybert, not even training yet. Mosquito's been out. We haven't talked much about Nicholas Mosquito at all these first few weeks of plotting, but I mean, last year I was leading the charge and people who was convinced that Nicholas Mosquito was a much larger key to this team's success than, you know, the stats would bear out, or, you know, the conversation really was suggesting. But you just look at their record with and without Mosquito last year. I mean, it was a stark contrast. And so he's a guy, his energy, his pressure from the front, how he forces other teams into turnovers, all those little things they miss when he's not in there. I think that will show when he gets back. So they've got guys, my point being, they've got guys who can cover for the guys that lose for international breaks. But, it is a bit tougher, especially at the back, just the way things have worked out right now because of Christian Dean's injury. The timing of losing Waston and Parker at the same time, if Cobb was healthy and Dean was there, you're not even worried. Great. Con Dean, go at it. You know, I mean, that's not a concern to put those two guys out in an MLS game. All of a sudden, Dean hurt for, what, 2-3 months now. He's out after surgery. And Kyle watching from the sideline today. Doesn't look too serious. I think it's his quad thigh, maybe. I've got to check on that. But all of a sudden, you're looking at that Houston game. Lawson's with Costa Rica. Parker's, I would expect, going to get called up to the U.S. Olympic team. Who do you play at center back? You've got Cole Seiler, the draft pick. You've got Andrew Jacobson, you just brought in, who apparently has played a handful of games at center back and is willing to fill in wherever. You got maybe Jordan Harvey you could slide over. Harvey's played there in a pinch for the Caps before. And you can play Sam Adekubi at left back. But, especially if you're 0-3 going into that game against a hot Houston team right now, that is not the central defense that you're going to feel confident going into that game. So right now, international call-ups early in the season, certainly the timing looks poor for this team, you know, especially when you're coming off a couple losses and you really just kind of want everyone together. But that's just the MLS. Every team has to deal with this. So it's about depth and it's about the types of players you bring in. You can't bring in every player you can't bring in international caliber guys all over the place without expecting to be in a pinch.
Would I be correct to assume that you are in the same camp as Siggy Schmidt and saying you hope that the Whitecaps and the Sounders don't play 100 times this season?
I know, that was awful. I mean, when that CONCACAF draw came, not his comments, but I agree with his comments. When that CONCACAF draw came out last year, it was just groan. I mean, like, the disappointment, A, of not seeing a Mexican team, a new team, and then the added disappointment of being drawn into the group with the team you already played three times, you already seem to see in playoffs. It was just, I don't know. Yeah, I fully agree. I don't know anyone out there who would disagree with what Siggy Schmidt said. I just think it was way, way too many games. It reminded me of the old Ken West basketball schedule. It was one year I remember UBC and Vic played, I think, like six times. You're just so sick of, you get sick of even your closest rival after a time. I wish there was some way to tweak the CCO rules that you wouldn't end up getting drawn into pools like that. So be it. There's a few things about the CCL they've got to get that moved in the calendar if they want MLS teams to sort of take it seriously and to be able to be competitive in it. And I know I'm going to, at some point this year, I'm going to get into it with Caps fans, I'm sure, some Caps fans, about the importance of CCL and, you know, the fans last year who demanding that Rob will play this first choice lineup. And that's just not how it's going to work. You know, the whole point of having a deeper roster is that your guys 12 through 20 are able to step up and play in those games and get results in those games. And that's why you build a roster. The salary cap is going to have to go up for MLS to be more competitive in CCL. There's no question about that. If you look at what Mexico is spending and what MLS is spending, it's not comparable. And then just the time of the year. I mean, look at LA year after year, and you look at the results and the MLS teams coming in, you know, they're in training camp and they're playing against teams that are much, much more fit than them and much more cohesive than them. So I would say until those things change, I wouldn't get too wrapped up in the Caps CCL fortunes. I still think it's a good tournament to qualify for and get, you know, it's great games for the young guys and let them see what they can do. And if if your depth guys somehow get you through the group stage and you get to the quarterfinals, fantastic. You can refocus the next year in March and give, you know, give that tournament a go. But to me, it's just a bonus.
Interesting, you know, news in Seattle, which is that Brad Evans is still out, so that may be a boon to the Whitecaps. And of course, the Sounders' front three is, well, I mean, Clint Dempsey's still in there, but you know, no Obafemi. A difficult Sounders team to kind of get my head around, much like the Whitecaps.
Yeah, I think it's going to take them a little while to figure it out. I mean, the Martins move surprised everyone, pretty much. Not even surprised the Sounders, I don't know. But, you know, that's a big, big loss for them. As good a player as Clint Dempsey is, and we've seen him perform well over the years, and including against Vancouver, at BC Place. But, you know, I'm very curious to see how he does this year without Martins there, because Martins just created so much space for Dempsey, aside from all his goal scoring and his setup play, which was fantastic. He just creates so much space. He's a bull. He's fast. He's a physical. I mean, he just does so many things for that team. And life after Obafemi is going to take them, I think, a little while to figure out how they want to play, what formation they want to play, who their best combinations are, and, you know, in attacking positions, where's Dempsey's best position. They have good players still. There's no question. But I, you know, it's certainly not the same. I mean, Valdez up top, who's coming off a slight injury, but sounds like he's going to play. I think he's a good player, but he's not Obafemi. Ivan Schitz in that attacking midfield role, I think, is a very good player. Certainly will be a danger man for the Caps in this one, and they're going to have to limit his time on the ball. And then it sounds like Freiberg, I always forget, but it sounds like he's still out, and he's a very important player for them in terms of their possession. And so without him, you know, you've got a young guy in Roldan who comes in and, you know, plays alongside Ozzy Alonso. He's not the player he used to be, still a very good player, but you know, all of a sudden the midfield not looking as strong, up top you're not as concerned as you used to be going in against the Sounders. And defensively, you know, there's always been question marks that have dogged the Sounders defensively. They've got decent players back there, but they've also got guys who are getting a bit long in the tooth. So you know, the team doesn't have the scare factor they used to. I mean, it's a very beatable team. It's a banged up team right now, just like Vancouver's a little bit. And it's a team, you know, at 0-2 that I think will be, it's going to be an interesting game. You know, you're going to have two teams that are pretty desperate for points early in the season. And two teams, like you say, that are still trying to figure things out, and two teams that have some big question marks around them.
It will be a very loud CenturyLink field, and I'm guessing the weather. I mean, the weather is sort of touch and go, I think, for Saturday. But the referee, Mark Geiger,
mm-hmm. Favorite of everyone's.
Favorite of everyone's. Are you looking forward to seeing Mr. Geiger do his thing?
I don't get too wrapped up in the referees. I mean, they have good and bad games.
Yeah,
you can pick apart some of the decisions from, of course, as always, through 2 weeks, and that's part of the fun of the sport. I think, you know, we all get a little obsessed about refs, and too much so, perhaps. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the way the last two games went. You look at last week in KC, is Mark Geiger going to be any better or worse than what we saw in the second half last year, when that last week when I think you could have pulled those calls out of a hat and made the same call? When I made that comment on Twitter at some point in the second half, I thought I could pull these calls and non-calls out of a hat, and they would make just as much sense as they do right now. And I know a couple of people tweeted me back and said I was being a homer and all this, which they clearly didn't understand what I was trying to say, which was for both teams, it made no sense. And I actually sent that tweet out after the non-call on Keon Throes. My point being, how is that not a yellow card based on the other cards he was handing out in that game? And then, of course, Throes goes and gets suspended. I didn't think it was a red card. I was wondering why he didn't get a yellow, but it's hard to make sense of the refereeing in this league. And Geiger, if you look at his track record, okay, he's had some very questionable games that the Whitecaps have been involved in, but you know, he's still a referee with a very impressive resume, and one of the more senior guys in the league. So Has it decided either of the first two games? No, not even close. I mean, the Caps have buried themselves by halftime 2 weeks in a row. And you can say what you want about their second half in KC. They fought back with 10 men. That's the positive. If they can cling to that and build on that, great. Did the goalkeeper, Amelia, deserve to be sent off when the Caps got the PK? You could argue that too. And then it would have been 10-10. And could they have gotten that second goal? Could they have tied it up? Maybe. But bottom line, nothing to do with refereeing for me. Well, very little to do with refereeing for me. You can't put yourself in a 2-0 hole and expect to get results in this league.
Should I just replay your thoughts on the yellow to, or the ban to Bolaños from last week and play that over Froese? I mean, to be honest, when I didn't see the game live, of course I was at the rugby, but when I watched it later and I saw Froese's foul, I was actually a bit surprised that wasn't a red. I thought that was a pretty aggressive approach to the ball on a player from behind.
Yeah, I think the Bolaños one makes less sense to me, even though if you see the still photo, the freeze frame of the point of contact on the replay, okay, it's a nasty contact. But like I said last week, you have to talk about that in context. You cannot take a still picture and make a decision. The player, in that case, the player Simon has moved into Bolaños' path as he's at a heavy touch. He's sliding to regain possession or to knock the ball away, and then the player comes through. It's different than, you know, him going right through a man, you know, a man who has position on him. So the Froese tackle, I would agree. I mean, if he had shown a red card at the time in that game, I would have been surprised, but I would not have been shocked. And I would have said, okay, well, that was a stupid challenge and wasn't a great one. I don't think it was malicious, but you've seen red cards for similar challenges. I don't know what was going through the referee's head. I can only imagine he knows the Caps are down to 10 men and he just doesn't want to put them down to 9 at that point. I mean, it's not like he wasn't there. He's like three feet away from the play. So my problem with these supplementary disciplines, retroactive disciplines, is, as we talked about, is what it does to the referees now. It has them second guessing themselves. I think it has a purpose when you're finding stuff behind a play that the referee hadn't made a judgment on. Absolutely. If you can see things that guys were doing on camera, but away from the referee's eye, I think those should be suspendable offenses. You know, to go back and start suspending people for plays that they haven't been red carded for in games, it's an interesting topic to me. I think it has to continue to be evaluated because I'm not sure it's added, you know, how long have we been at this now? 2 or 3 years with this kind of setup. And it's not like things have been getting better. It's not like the refereeing in the game feels any better today than did a year ago or 2 years before that. It's not like the yellows and the reds are making any more sense. I think the retroactive suspensions are a little bit of an annoyance for fans. I think it messes with the coaches' planning for the next week. I mean, there's a lot of things about them that I don't love. But more than anything, I just don't know if it does the referees any more favor than it would if you just sat that referee down and said, you got that, you know, behind closed doors, not in public, and said, you got that wrong. Here's why, you know, here's why that should have been a red. And you go back to the training field, for lack of a better term, with these referees, and you continue to work with them to get the calls right in the games. It's not a simple answer. I mean, the bottom line is the refereeing needs to improve. So, you know, how do you go about doing that? And they haven't found the perfect solution. They obviously want to protect stars in this league, and that's admirable. But I do think the system needs a bit of a tweak. Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of these retroactive suspensions.
We've been going for a while here, but there were a couple other things I wanted to sort of get at quickly, which was, first of all, what was Jordan Smith thinking when he went at the ball?
That was a red card.
Yes, that was easy. Andrew Jacobson, who I think we're kind of assuming is going to see some time.
Yeah, I had no idea what Smith was thinking other than he wasn't thinking. I mean, my first reaction, honestly, was, well, when I saw him, just when I saw the whole play starting to develop and that he was, his man had a step on him, was in behind, and that Smith was going to be chasing, my first reaction was, he's going to get a red card on this play. Because I've seen him train, and I've seen him in some preseason games, and I've commented a few times to people, man, he is not, like, he is just a surefire red card at some point this season, probably sooner than later, because he has so many 50-50, I don't mean 50-50 balls, I mean tackles that are, you know, a coin flip whether you're going to get sent off or not. And he just gets, you know, positionally, he lets his man get in behind him so often, and he has the athletic ability to make up that half step or that step. But, you know, you put yourself in that position where you're chasing that often, you know, you're going to put yourself into, you're going to get yourself into trouble. And I thought he just, you know, a little red mist, as they say. I think because of the way the goal happened, as soon as I saw him chasing, I just felt like he was going to go to ground. And I, you know, all I can think is that's Graeme Zuzi. He just made me look foolish on the 2-0 goal. I'm going to get you back. I mean, that was my interpretation of that play. That he knew exactly who the player was, he knew exactly what he was doing, and he it might not have even been about him thinking he could get the ball. It was, I mean, he was so far away from getting the ball that to me it just looked like I'm going to take you out here. You know, that'll show you to make me look silly on the goal. So, I mean, that's just immaturity from a player if that's what was in that reaction. But lots of guys with lots of things to improve on. Smith, I mean, we're getting back to the right back spot now, but I think it is it's a crucial discussion because that's your absolute, that's your biggest concern if you're a Whitecaps fan right now. I would say on that front, you know, who do you fancy more to improve in a shorter time frame, Fraser Aird or Jordan Smith, even though Smith has the experience on him. You know, he's a Costa Rican international. He's played 100 games for Saprissa. He's spent half a season with this team, knows the league a little bit now, has a few MLS games under his belt. You'd think he has the advantage on that front. But, you know, I have to say, just attitude-wise, what I see out of the two of them and just body language, and I would fancy Aird's chances of learning on the job quicker than I would Smith's right now. I just, to me, Smith looks like a player who's lacking in self-belief a bit, and he needs a little bit, he's just tentative in everything he does. And Aird, I think, you know, might be, he's got that sort of, that confidence about him that borders on cockiness, but I think it might serve him well. And he's not afraid, you know. I think the fact that he put up his hand at halftime of that first game against Montreal and said that goal was my fault, and you know, get me back out there. He has that about him where you can tell he just is just chomping at the bit to get back on the field and prove people wrong and prove that he can learn from his mistakes. And you know, he's not a natural right back. He's new to this position, so he's going to make mistakes. But you know, I think he at least has the personality that I think the mistakes won't bother him. Whereas I feel like, you know, Smith's not in the same headspace right now. We'll see. I mean, the answer might be neither of them, you know. The answer might be this team has to go get a right back, and either a free agent, or they have to go, you know, wait until the summer and try and make a move. And maybe the Maddox money helps on that front. But that's certainly a position to watch. And in terms of Jacobson, you know, I like him, and we haven't seen a ton of him here over the years, but every time you see him play, he's pretty much the same. He's a very steady, solid, reliable MLS veteran midfielder. He does a lot of different things quite well. You know, you wouldn't pick necessarily one or two qualities of his that are outstanding, but I think he's rarely going to hurt you. He's pretty much always going to help you in some facet of the game. And, you know, he's a big body in that midfield. I think they could use that physicality, that size. He's not an overly physical player, but they could use his size and his smarts in those central areas. He's good in possession. You know, I think he'll be a calming presence for them, as well as give them a bit more bite. And he's a decent link player. I mean, he played last year with in the midfield with Lampard, with Pirlo, which means, you know, the coach had confidence in his ability to play with those guys, you know, in terms of soccer IQ. And that's one of the first things Carl Robinson said when they traded for him is this guy played alongside Lampard, you know, for a reason. He's not just coming in here to be a defensive midfielder. He's coming here to be that two-way guy that we felt we needed. He's cheaper than Gershon Kofi, and they think, well, I believe they think he can do a little bit more than Gershon can overall in terms of his influence on the game week to week. Certainly his consistency. I mean, as we talked about before, Gershon's top level is very, very, very good. He just didn't do it quite often enough. I think Jacobson will be more the steady guy in that role that Gersh was filling in. And I think what we've seen at Keon Sproles is he's ready to really push the starts in that position. But they needed depth there. I know the first reaction from some people was, why are they going out and getting a 30-year-old just after Froze has played this very good first game? And, you know, but again, 34 games, 3 competitions. You know, you're not going to rely on a 19-year-old in Froze and another 19-year-old in Flores. With Russell hurt right now and still not back training, I mean, there's just so many questions in that midfield area. I think it's a very good pickup for them. And I think he will get time in Seattle. I don't think he'll start. It wouldn't shock me, considering now Froze is suspended and they're a bit thin in this field. But it would surprise me to see him start. I think fitness-wise, he needs another week or two to get up to speed. Because he was sitting at home in the Bay Area waiting for this trade to happen. So he didn't miss a week or 10 days or so of practice time. But looked pretty fit in training. And he's raring to go. He's very happy to be here. He's got a nice Canadian connection. His wife's a Canadian citizen. Her mom was a Canadian. She's got his wife's got a ton of extended family here. So they've got a dual citizen 9-month-old boy, and they've got their 2 dogs. And I saw him Instagramming already pictures of walking around the seawall with Jordan Harvey and his wife and their kid, their baby. And those guys are former teammates from their Philadelphia days, and they stayed in touch and are friends. And I think in that regard, he'll settle in pretty quick here. And this team needed more MLS experience. I think that's something overall we've lacked a bit of over the years. You know, I think the South American direction they proved has been a smart way to go. You know, they found value in Latin America, but you've got to find the right balance. And I think losing Betashore, it was important that they get somebody else in who is a bit older and who's been around and been in this league. And I think he's going to offer them a lot.
All right, Mark, we've been going for a long time. I will give you a quick chance to say the best place to go in Seattle. We've been many times. And then we're going to have to go.
And why don't I ever research these things?
It's always forget. Go with your gut.
You got to give me a heads up.
Go with your gut.
What the heck? I went to this great little backroom bar in Seattle last time I was there, and I wish I could remember the name of it. There's some fantastic little kind of secret-ish bars in Seattle. That can be obnoxious when you have to wait around for like an hour to get in somewhere, but you get lucky, it can be.
You know what? I'll make my suggestion. I may have made it before. I'll say go to the Alibi Room. There's the Alibi Room in Seattle. It's by the gum wall. You have to go down and under the stairs there. You don't even know it's there. People go find the gum wall, but there's a little door there. There's a little sign. It's great pizza. It's great beer. It's not that far from the stadium, so you can kind of enjoy yourself and then get over to the stadium. So there we go. That's my tip.
Okay, that's good. Let's rely on you for a week.
There we go. All right, folks.
I like that better.
Mark's on Twitter, as we know, Province Weaver. You can find him on Facebook, facebook.com/Province Weaver. Join us on iTunes. Of course, you can find us if you just search for Whitecaps Weekly. Other links are available through FeedBurner. We're on Stitcher. We're on TuneIn. Mark, you enjoy yourself.
Go have a glass of wine at the Walrus in the cup
there. There you go.
You're fancy.
Yes.
You're fancy like me.
All right. Folks, we'll see you next week.